planned for like 18 months to go and do it, and I got 350Ks in. I got a blister on day one and I didn't treat it well enough. My experience in long hikes wasn't huge back then. Didn't really look after it great, just kept taping it, and every day I was ripping more and more skin off when I took the tape off. It got heavily infected, and at 350Ks, my hubby was like, you're done, you're out. I ended up on IV antibiotics, got told I could have lost my foot. The doctor was like, I was going to keep going. I was like, this is a minor setback, we'll get some antibiotics, we'll keep going. And he was like, you will lose your foot if you keep going.
Hey, welcome back to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, where we talk about what it takes to go the distance in running and in life. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultramarathon runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation is going to go. So if you're ready, let's get started. My guest this week is Jackie O'Donohue. Jackie is an adventurer, an ultramarathon runner, hiker, author, and a cricket player. When I was talking to her about being on the podcast, I found out she plays cricket, and I didn't know anything about cricket. So to be a little bit better informed, I actually looked up what cricket was about. I don't know that I really understand it all that well, but it's nothing like baseball. Other than the fact that you have a ball and a bat and you hit the ball and you run. So Jackie is on a women's cricket team. So we talk about cricket, about mindset, about mental health issues, and all sorts of things mindset related. Hope you enjoy this conversation that I had with Jackie O'Donohue.
Well, yeah, I play women's cricket and we train two nights a week. So we would struggle to train without daylight savings. So
right. Yeah. Which is kind of cool. I didn't, you know, typical, you know, American, I don't know anything about cricket. So when I was talking to you, you know, about being on the podcast, I thought I probably should figure out something, have a little understanding about cricket. I watched a couple of YouTube videos and, you know, talking about the rules of the game, and I thought it's just a very different experience.
Yeah. And it's quite funny because we've had two girls recently who have come and played with us who have come from baseball, and it's so funny to watch people who have grown up playing baseball now try and play cricket. Like it's, mm-hmm. it's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because baseball, the ball goes just one direction, and I mean, there's lines where it's out of bounds, and cricket,
and you also in cricket you got to run with your bat, whereas in baseball they drop the bat.
Yeah. That would be hard to get used to.
Yep.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Yeah, I was like, I enjoyed, you know, just, I still probably don't understand it really well, but I at least have some concept about what it was like. It's like it looks like an interesting game.
It is. It's good fun. Very strategic.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like there would be a little bit more strategy or different strategy than there would be in American baseball.
Yeah, and depends on the game too. Like you could play a 5-day test match or you could play like a quick 20-20 match. So each game is going to be different as to what strategy you're going to employ. And
oh, wow. Okay. So yeah,
it's intense.
I remember reading something about that and thought, oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for agreeing to be on the podcast. I appreciate it. Now, summer for you there, right?
It is, yeah. And the sun has finally arrived in Melbourne. It's been a cold start to summer, but I'm finally in shorts and a t-shirt, so I'm pretty happy.
Well, actually, it's a couple of days. The solstice will be the 21st there as well, yeah.
Yeah.
We start winter in a couple of days. So
yeah, it's been very wet in Australia this year. Lots of flooding, and yeah, so everyone's looking forward to some sunshine.
Well, it's a couple of years ago, didn't you have a pretty dry year and a lot of fires?
Yeah, so I've lived in Melbourne 5 years. I used to live on the west coast in Perth, and when I first moved to Melbourne, so we're talking like a 4-day drive between Melbourne and Perth. That's how big it is. But when I first moved here, everyone was in drought. Like, you know, we had bushfires, half the country was on fire. And this year it's been floods, half the country's underwater. So it's just crazy.
Yeah. Well, and we have that here in the States too sometimes. Texas has been under drought and then they've had floods. You know, it just, it kind of seems to go that way.
Weird weather patterns.
Well, how did you? I've read some of your adventures and some of the things that you've done. I'm like that. I kind of admire your the things you don't just do like one thing. You've done ultra marathons. You've done cricket. You've done a lot of different things. What was it that inspired you to start going out and doing stuff, adventures?
Well, the running started because of my dad. So my dad passed away 10 years ago. He was a runner. He served in the Royal Australian Navy and was very much a cross-country runner as a kid and would always show me his trophies and love talking about it. And he got quite sick and we got told he had probably, 6 to 12 months to live. We actually got 5 years out of him. And in that time, he lost his short-term memory, but he had his long-term memory. So he would kind of relive a lot of stories from his past, and a lot of them were about running. And I started running kind of as a stress relief because I was watching, my big strong dad fade away. So it was more of a stress relief that I started running. And I ran my first half marathon and sort of got the bug a little bit on the road. And then I decided I wanted to run a marathon and dad to see me run a marathon. Mm-hmm. So in 2012, I ran my first marathon. It was the Perth Marathon. So that was on road. And dad was at the finishing line, which was amazing. He passed away a couple of months after that. And I had literally caught the bug. Like running went from kind of as a stress relief to then it became grief. And dealing with the grief of losing him, I kind of grieved by running, I guess you could say. And then I discovered trail running, pardon me, and oh man, I was hooked once I started trail running. And I'd grown up, I've got a very big family full of brothers, and we'd grown up with a lot of hiking and camping and that sort of stuff, and it just sort of brought all that joy back. And so I just massively got into trail running. And I just found that I just wanted to keep going further and further and kind of had this thing of how far can I push myself before I break? And it just sort of rolled on from there, and that turned into hiking adventures and turned into the adventure of moving states and then getting into cricket. And, adventure I think is my new middle name.
So and you wrote a book about your dad. Indeed. So tell me a little bit about your book. What was, writing a book is very similar to running. I found it like, takes a lot of dedication and,
it was so much harder than I expected. So in Melbourne in Australia, we were put into, I think we had the longest lockdown in the world. I think China might have beaten us now, but we were put into lockdown in 2020 with COVID. And I'd always said I was going to write a book about dad, and I'd kind of pulled some stuff together. And a group of girlfriends and I started doing a virtual writing session once a month where we would jump on Zoom together and just write, and we kind of held each other accountable. So that kind of got the story out, but it also really helped with the emotional aspect of the story. Like I had that little support group around me. Getting it out was kind of the easy part. It was emotional, but it was easy. But then going back and editing it was really tough. There's some stuff in there that I had to actually go and check with some of Dad's old Navy colleagues that it was okay to write. Because Dad suffered PTSD. A lot of his colleagues suffered PTSD. There'd been suicides. I didn't want to trigger anyone with anything. So that was quite hard. So I took myself away for a weekend, just me and the mountains, and ran and edited and finally got it done. But effectively, I was going to write a book about Dad, and it was kind of going to be his life story. And then I was like, I kind of hate biographies and autobiographies personally. I'm not a fan. And I was like, I didn't want to write that. So it ended up, it's called Reflections Through the Periscope, and it's called My Love Letter to Dad. And it ended up being, I started his death and I finish at his funeral, and in between is a reflection of everything that Dad's ever taught me. So it's sort of part his story, part my story, a little bit of everything thrown in between. So
That does sound like a better approach than just a biography. Yeah, that's
I enjoyed it more writing that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think it would be good for the for people who'd read it as well. I mean,
he was a Submariner, and a lot of the Submariners who have read it, who served with him, the comments from them and the feedback from them it's made the whole process worth it. Like, to hear that they're now talking about their mental health and talking about things that happened in the past that were brushed under the carpet and talking about their health in general, that was like the goal of the whole book, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and did you said your dad suffered from PTSD. That seems to be in the military in the United States as well, that there's just seems to be a lot of suicide among veterans is a very, very common thing. And you mentioned that too. Was that something that, that was it helpful for something that was helpful for you to be able to kind of talk about that?
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny now because I actually work for a psychology clinic. I'm not a psychologist myself, but I work for a clinic promoting the psychologists in the business. So I've kind of gone down this space, this mental health space, because of Dad's experience. I look back and it all comes down to this whole, we're big, tough blokes in the Navy. We don't talk about it. We go to the pub and we have a few drinks and we don't talk about it. And then I went into the police force, exactly the same thing. We don't talk about our feelings. You go to the pub, you drink your feelings away. So it's funny because at the company I work for now, our motto is let's talk about it. And we're just trying to change the narrative of mental health that, it's okay to have healthy discussions around your mental health, particularly in that space.
Why do you think, as you are observing, why is that such a hard thing for men? I mean, besides the tough guy.
I don't know so much about the US, but in Australia, there's this very much, tough ocker Aussie bloke, particularly that older age group who have come through, military or the police. I don't know what it is. I'm hoping we're reducing the stigma of it. I think it's just how people have grown up, perhaps, that, you've got to be resilient, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I only hope that we're changing the narrative.
Yes, and I've talked to several people that have suffered with depression, and they say, that's been a common theme. If there's a man that is a runner in England, and now breath work was the thing that really helped him between breath work and running.
Yeah.
But he a lot of his work is toward mental health and trying to get men to, not hold the things in for so long that they, until they break.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny, I posted something on LinkedIn recently. I was in the car in an Uber heading to a function. And on the radio, they were talking about how women can talk about postnatal depression, but men don't talk about how it's affecting them. And what I loved was that they were talking about this on the radio station at like 6 o'clock at night. And I'm like, this is so good that they're actually having these conversations now on a radio station. Like, we're getting there.
Slowly. Well, yeah. In the United States, at least in times past, I don't know if it is now, but the men were kind of saw their role as to be the protector of the women. So, if they, they were to help get the women through whatever and set your feelings aside. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of how it's always been. Yeah.
So you've run several ultra marathons. What kind of races have you run in ultra marathons?
So I've lost count of how many. I was thinking about it as I was dialing in. I was like, how many ultra marathons have I done? And I've completely lost count I stopped counting around 30, I think. I got very addicted to ultras very early. Mm-hmm. I ran my first ultra not long after I'd run my first marathon. And I just loved this idea of pushing your body to the point where your body wants to quit, but your mind keeps you going. And I just kind of got fascinated with that. And I started with a trail ultra in Perth, and I kind of mixed between trail ultras and road ultras. There wasn't a massive running community in Perth at the time. And so I was just running everything I possibly could. It's grown significantly over there now, which is fantastic. My first 100-kilometre run, I wanted to do what's now called the UTA 100. Back then it was called the North Face 100 in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales. And I kind of turned that into a big event. My friends were coming over from the UK. They came and crewed me. My hubby came and crewed me. Like, it just was a big party. And it was bloody tough, but I had this overwhelming sense of inner achievement when I finished that, that I don't know if I'm addicted to that feeling, but I do love that feeling. So, yeah, I went from there. I did a couple more hundreds, and I did my first 100-miler over in Perth on the what's called the Waterous Trail on Foot, or WTF 100. I probably loved 80 to 90% of that. Probably the last few kilometres hurt too much, but I just really enjoyed it, and I found this joy in running that I still carry now. Like, I just have this absolute joy for being out on the trails on my own a lot. I train a lot on my own. A lot of the races I do, I'm on my own. There's not a big female running community. We're getting there. We're growing. But especially in Perth that day, like, we only had 5 female runners start.
Wow.
And I got a bonus second place because only 2 finished. So I'll take that.
there is that advantage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Same as I did the 24-hour track run. It was the inaugural one over in Perth. And I came second in that as well. I think we probably had 8 in the field, maybe, from memory. It was a long time ago now. And, yeah, so I've kind of dabbled in a few different things. Moving to Melbourne was huge. When I lived on the west coast of Australia, there's no mountains over there, and over here we have alpine region. So that was a whole nother ball game for me to be able to run in the mountains. The ability to run in the mountains, and things like having to account for weather changes. And, you know, there's a mountain here where you go 12 kilometres up the side of the mountain in this race. There's nowhere in Perth you can go 12 kilometres up. So the last 5 years for me has definitely been just exploring new trails, new mountains. It just, yeah, it lights me up.
Well, you did, I saw in one of your blog posts, you did a hike on a place where you had raced, and you were talking about the descent was pretty, but there wasn't much of a trail. Is that?
That's quite common. You tend to be bush bashing, and that one, yeah, we were coming down some really steep section like, you've got your heavy pack on because you're hiking and you're carrying everything. And the trail just disappears, and you're climbing over rocks, and you're kind of bush bashing through trees. And I love that sense of adventure. Like, and you're just guided by your GPS. Yeah, it's good fun.
But they ran a race over that same course. So they were due to run the race
not long after us. I think they might have cleared some of the course for safety reasons, but I was kind of joking with them just to leave it as is.
So ultramarathon running, then you are also a backpacker and do some adventures kind of on your own that are not organized.
I mean, we call it hiking, not backpacking, which is funny, but
well, see
I've never heard backpacking.
I don't know, other people might disagree with me, but usually a hike is with a small pack, and you're not gone for very long.
I'm a backpacker then.
but yes, it is. I guess hiking would also cover that but the way I kind of look at it is like, oh yeah, if it's a hike, you know, you're coming back the same day.
Yeah, no, I prefer, the longer I'm out there, the better. I did a trail called the Bibman Track in Western Australia, and it's 1,000 kilometres long. And I started that years ago now. I've forgotten how long ago it was. I think it was about 2013, 2014. I was like, I'm going to go and walk this. But most people take 3 months to do it, and I'm like, I'm going to do it in 28 days. Planned for like 18 months to go and do it, and I got 350Ks in. I got a blister on day one, and I didn't treat it well enough. My experience in long hikes wasn't huge back then. Didn't really look after it great, just kept taping it, and every day I was ripping more and more skin off when I took the tape off. It got heavily infected, and at 350Ks, my hubby was like, you're done, you're out. I ended up on IV antibiotics, got told I could have lost my foot. The doctor was like, I was still in my head, I was going to keep going. I was like, this is a minor setback. We'll get some antibiotics. We'll keep going. And he was like, you will lose your foot if you keep going. And I really struggled to like with the stop, with the failure of not finishing that. Mm-hmm. And it took me a couple of years before I would actually talk about the fact that I hiked 350 Ks in 10 days completely by myself, carrying all my gear. And so I went out when I moved to Melbourne, I started doing some hikes here in Victoria, up the mountains. And I love going on my own. I love that solitude. I'm in a role at work where I talk a lot and I present a lot. So to me, disappearing in the bush on my own where I don't have to talk to anyone and I don't have to present, like, I love that. But, yeah, it took me a while to kind of recover from that and find my love for hiking again. And when I found the mountains, yeah, now I love it. Like, I book in at the start of the year, I book in 2 solo hikes for the year. I like to do 3 to 4 nights. I would love to do more, but I don't get enough leave. and I book them in for the year so my hubby knows when they are. We know that that's like my little switch-off time. I'm disappearing in the bush for a few days on my own in my little tent. And yeah. I think it's good for the soul.
Yes. So is there, you said the long trail, is that is there one on the East Coast as well that is long like that?
it's just under 700 kilometers, but it takes a lot longer because it's over mountains, whereas mm-hmm. WA is pretty flat. That is totally on my radar, and I've already ordered the book and I've got the maps and I've just got to work out. I've started my job only about 6 months ago, so I've just got to time it right to take the time off work to go and do it all in one hit. But it's definitely on the radar.
And there are 3 trails in the United States that bisect the country. And so,
yeah.
And then I found there's several of those long trails. There's one in Israel as well that goes from the south to the north. And
okay, I didn't know that. Yeah.
I saw somebody do a presentation on Israel and they talked about the trail and I was like, yeah. Wow, that's, that's one of the things that I have been kind of putting on my radar is like, yes, I'd like to do some of that. That sounds like a lot of fun.
It's just something about surviving in the bush with just everything on your back. Like, that's it. What you carry is what you've got. I just, yeah, I love that.
So where do you get water? I mean, from, you know, my, you know, a lot of what I see from Australia, is oftentimes the outback or the desert areas. And so that, I know the cold country is not like that. So, but what do you, when you're out, what do you do for water?
Yeah, so WA was tough when I hiked the Bibbman Track. So there's huts along the way, and the hut is really just 3 walls with a roof, but they have a water tank. And I think the rangers actually go in and fill those tanks up.
Oh, okay.
Because water is so scarce in WA. So WA is, like, even as a runner, you would always take extra water with you. There was one day where I had to carry 7 litres of water, which you can imagine that's 7 kilos on your back added on, because I had to do a diversion and I wasn't going to see a hut all day. And it was hot, like I'm talking 30 plus degrees Celsius. I had to put the Celsius in.
Yes, yeah. yes, so, I can't do that conversion in my head, but I talked to enough people in various places. It's like, yeah, I know 30 degrees is hot.
yeah, especially when you've got all the gear and stuff on. Over here in the mountains, it's a bit easier. You're okay when you go down the valleys. You've got the rivers, and you can drink the water from the rivers. Like, I'll treat it if I need to. It's really when you go up onto the top of the range. So the hike I did at the start of this year, I probably carried 4 litres, knowing, though, that there was water in the tank at the top, because I met another hiker that told me there was water in that tank. If I didn't know there was water, I probably would have carried about 6. You get used to carrying a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. And that running out of water is not good. That's
not good at all.
whether you're running, and I would imagine backpacking would be even more of a,
yeah. And I've had a few scares, so I will always err on the side of caution and carry extra now. Cause I've had a few kind of scary moments where I haven't had water.
Well, I let an aid station fill my bladder on a 100-mile run I was on, and I don't know what happened. They didn't get enough. I was 40 minutes from the aid station and ran out of water. So I was pretty dry when I got in.
Yeah, I bet.
So now I always check it. I make sure that they filled it all the way up. So, what did you have on your radar for coming up? You said you had two hikes. Do you have any races coming up that you want to?
Yeah, so there was a race that I was meant to do in November, Alpine 100 miler, and it got moved because of landslides. So we've had all this rain, which has created landslides, and probably for the better because the race director ended up getting COVID that week. So so that's been moved to April next year. So that's on my cards for next year. April's probably a better time of the year for me anyway, because it means I don't have to miss a game of cricket to run. It just means we won't have the daylight savings then, so it'll get darker earlier. But that's, 100 miles. It summits the tallest mountain in Victoria, Mount Bogong. It goes up the second tallest, Mount Feathertop and Mount Hotham. So elevation, I forget off the top of my head what it is. I want to say 12,000 metres, but I'm not sure. I attempted it this year in April and fell short, 40Ks short. So I'm going back for more. I think, though, this year I was very fulfilled even though I didn't finish it. I've been really trying to move away from this achievement, like my little achiever brain having to achieve all the time, and rather than have achievement, find fulfillment in my running. And I really got that this year in the miler, even though I didn't quite make it to the finish. I was 40Ks short. I still had just the most unbelievable run and loved it and loved being in the mountains, especially after being in lockdown for 2 years. So I'm heading back to have a crack at that again. I was meant to be doing Down Under 135, which is a 135-mile race. Unfortunately, though, because of the date changes, that was the weekend after, and I didn't think my body was up to 2 miles in a row. So that's going to be a 2024 target. And then there's a new race over here called the Unreasonable East. It started this year in the Blue Mountains in New South Wales, but unfortunately there was a lot of damage to the trails from storms, so we couldn't hold it there anymore. So it's moved to Queensland, and that will go from Port Douglas down to Cairns in Queensland. So that's a 100-miler that I'll take on in August. That's going to be a challenge because I'll be training in a Victorian winter, which gets quite chilly down here. And then I'll be going north where it's very humid, kind of rainforesty almost, to do the race. So the challenge is going to be training for completely different conditions to run in. But I'm looking forward to that because I'll take hubby along. He can crew. He doesn't overly enjoy crewing, but he's going to come and crew, and then we'll take a holiday on the back of that, which will be lovely. Once I've ticked off those two, who knows? We'll see what happens.
Well, I was reading, and you said there are you still you had done a gotten off of social media for a year. Is this the end of your year for that, or?
Yeah, it started Christmas Day last year. It started kind of as I was just annoyed with people on Christmas Day. The borders were shut here and we couldn't get home to see family for Christmas, so I was just a bit kind of down. So I was like, I'm sick of seeing everyone's happy family snaps on Facebook, so I'm off Facebook for the year. And my hubby I said I was off Facebook until the end of the year, so what's that, like 5 days, 6 days? Mm-hmm. And he didn't think I could do it, so I managed that and I got to New Year. And then I'm like, I'm just going to keep going and see how far I can go. And then after I'd done a couple of months, I was like, I reckon I'm going to go all year. I did succumb a couple of times. Like there was a couple of times I was like, this is too good. I've got to put it on Facebook and make people jealous. Mm-hmm. But I really questioned my motives around why I was putting things on social media. So I shared a couple of blogs and I share a couple of charity things I do. But when I was just kind of posting a photo of me on the trails in the morning or something, I started to question why. And I really found that I was putting stuff on social media kind of sometimes as a bit of a, haha, look what I'm doing, mm-hmm. sometimes to make people jealous, sometimes to stroke my own ego. And I was like, this isn't why I want to be on social media. So, yeah, I pretty much stopped for the year apart from a couple of little things that I succumbed and posted. Like I went to Fiji and I just had to rub that in. But it was quite life-changing for me because I found that I'd get up in the morning and just scroll social media. And I've stopped doing that. I get up and I read my book or I walk the dog and I just have so much more time on my hands. So I may come back and I may post, but I don't think I'll ever go back to being that mindless scrolling through social media again. I've just, yeah.
So what changed in your mindset for that? I mean, what was kind of your switch? Because did you notice any changes in what you were doing instead and how it made you feel inside?
Definitely calmer. So I didn't have like there was I'm not an anxious person generally, but there was definitely a calmer mood about me. I don't know. In terms of mood, I felt calmer, but I'd also timed it with I started meditation about 12 months ago as well. So I had more time to meditate. I found I was actually walking away from the phone. I would walk the dog and not take the phone with me. I struggled a little bit because we had to scan QR codes a lot over here for checking in and stuff. But where I could, I left the phone at home and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed not having notifications going off all the time. My morning changed. I used to wake up and lie in bed scrolling, and I found that instead I would get up, I would sit out on the balcony with a cup of coffee and just sort of watch the birds. I was a bit more mindful of what was going on around me. And I don't want to go back down that rabbit hole of scrolling and looking, because a lot of the time, not all the time, but a lot of the time I was just looking at crap. I'll admit it got me into trouble a few times. I missed a couple of birthdays. I missed some things that happen in people's lives. But on the flip side of that, I'm like, no one told me this has happened in their life. They assume I've seen it on social media. Like we're missing so much because we're assuming people have seen it on social media rather than actually catching up with people or picking up the phone and talking to people and having conversations instead. Like I feel like we're missing the real connection.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think introverts tend to like not having to talk to people. but it is. I think yeah, you're right about that that human connection. So
And so you know, for the introverts, just text instead.
Well, and a lot of introverts I know are very good at conversation, but I know that they need to have time. Away from. Interactions as well.
And I class myself as an introvert because when I'm on at work, I'm great, but I need that time alone to recharge big time.
Yeah. Yeah. When you talked about, having to be by yourself for days in the bush, I was like, although I tend to be an extrovert, I really enjoy energy from talking to people.
Yeah.
But I appreciate my time when I'm out by myself on the trail.
It recharges my mental batteries is the best way to describe it.
So you said you started meditating. How did that go? As one who failed many times to meditate, what was the motivation to start meditating and how did you make it for a year?
It was actually through a running coach. I hadn't had a running coach for a while, probably a good 12 months. I'd just kind of been doing my own thing. And an old friend in Perth had taken up, he'd just started coaching, but his coaching was very much around coaching the mindset more than coaching the legs. And so I said to him, let's have a crack at doing this together. And I started a 12-week program with him, which was all around learning how to meditate, learning different types of meditation and things like that. So I was in lockdown anyway, so I was sitting around with lots of time on my hands. So it was a really nice way. It helped me get through lockdown, I think. And now I will meditate for 20 minutes every day, no question. I travel a lot for work, so I tend to do long meditations on the flight. Meditation has completely changed my life.
So you can meditate when you're out among people.
Yeah, yep. I meditate in the car, meditate in the train. I find I don't need a quiet spot to meditate. I just need to quieten my mind wherever I am. Mm-hmm. So
how has it helped you? How has it affected your running? I mean, because I'm a firm believer that meditation and running are very compatible, but I'd be interested to know what your perspective, how does it help you?
I mean, my coach Rob is also, we've gone down this, it's not just about meditation, but it's also around mindset and stripping the ego away with running and, you know, it's the journey, not the destination. So there's a lot of spiritual sort of guidance in there as well. It's helped. I guess I don't overthink as much anymore with my running. So I'm very much just enjoying the moment. And there's a thing he talks about is finding the joy in the run. And another one of his lines is, I might be struggling, but I'm not suffering. So just kind of, that's one of my favorites. You know, just when you're struggling and you look around and you see a beautiful flower and finding the joy in that. And he's really taught me to kind of flip those negative, because you know, you're like 100 miles into a run and your brain's going, what the hell are you doing? to kind of flip those and go, wow, how lucky am I? I'm out in the mountains. Like, how beautiful is this view? And just changing my mindset a bit on my runs. You know, not that I have to get up and go for a four-hour run today, but I get to go up, get to go out on the trails for 4 hours today and things like that. In terms of my life in general, I was like go, go, go all the time. Now I'm a bit more, you know, just one thing at a time, finding a bit more equanimity in things, not as road ragey in the car anymore.
I have found that as well. Yeah. That was always my thing. Traffic, you know, that got me as a, you know, like,
yeah,
where do these people, how do they get their driving license? <You know? laughs>
Traffic and airports was my thing. Now I'm like cool, calm and collected.
That's interesting. Well, and you brought up the word suffer, and I'm like, I was an English major and, in the old English, suffer meant to allow. It didn't have so much negative connotation. In fact, in the King James, you know, Jesus said, "Suffer the little children to come to me." You know, it was like the suffering was not focused on the negative part of it. It was the fact that you were open to, you were allowing this.
And that's interesting.
And but it's changed. I mean, especially among runners, you know, they talk about, you know, suffer, you know, it's that you're actually being put into a lot of pain. It's like, it's my attitude toward pain is that, you know, kind of, you know, it's going to be there, but you allow it. You know, you say that I'm going through this. I'm not trying to resist it. It's just there, and well, let's just let it pass. So, Sorry, my lecture on the meaning of words.
Love it.
that was good. So, you said you're, you know, one of the fundraisers that you did was around mental health. Is that something that is? I mean, you work in that industry, so how are you? What organizations are you supporting for the mental health aspect of running?
So I work for a company called Access Psych. So we're psychologists providing treatment. But a lot of the charities I've raised money for, so Lifeline, that's a 24/7 phone number you can call for immediate suicide support. And Black Dog is another one here that offers a lot of work in the mental health space. They also do a lot of research. I did a run this year. It was my first multi-day run. It was 500 kilometers over 7 days.
Was that the one in August? I saw on your website that you had done that in August.
Yes, that was for Black Dog. Unfortunately, I only managed 4 days and 323 Ks. My body broke on me, very much broke on me. And it took me a long time actually to kind of stop hating my body for breaking on me. I'm a very much a body lover. Like, I talk to my legs very regularly about how awesome they are. And it took me probably a good month before I even wanted to think about running again. I was ready to quit running altogether. I was angry at my body because I'd been so determined to do this, you know, 500 Ks. and to fall short just, yeah, it took me a long time to mentally process that. And I ended up crewing my girlfriend for her first 100-kilometer race. And it was during that that I was like, wow, like this is my love for running right here, just crewing her and seeing her run her first 100. And, you know, she finished at like 4 a.m. or something ridiculous and was crying with tears of joy. And that totally brought back my love for running. So I say to anyone, if you're struggling with your running or you're struggling with your motivation, go and crew someone or go and volunteer at a race, because it completely brought back my joy for running. And my want to run again and my love for my body again. So, yeah, but that raised money for Black Dog, which was kind of fitting because I'm, yeah.
Well, and that's interesting that, you know, you talk about crewing and volunteering. Have you ever paced? Do they have pacers? Have you done some pacing?
Yeah, I enjoy pacing, which is funny because I don't enjoy having a pacer.
Well, interesting. Why not?
I think I was just – I had a pacer once that I didn't really like. Like it didn't go well. And I think maybe that's ruined me a little bit. But sometimes I feel like I want to do this on my own. Like I just want to process it myself and I don't need anyone else there. I'm going to get through it myself. And having a pacer there sometimes can frustrate me. Having said that, I think you just got to find the right pacer. Like I had a girlfriend pace me in April and her and I had fun. Like we were joking about hallucinations and it did make it more fun. And from a safety aspect, it was good to have her. I was going through my second night sort of thing. It was good to have her with me. But I do struggle with finding the right pacer and making sure that I'm not getting frustrated by my pacer, I think. But I love pacing.
Well, and one of the things about pacers is, you know, that is an important aspect is the, you know, making sure that the runner eats and drinks, drinks enough.
And, yeah, which kind of to me feels like I'm being told what to do. So if my pace is like, Jackie, have you eaten? I'll be like, whatever, shut up. I'm fine, leave me alone.
Well, I got that too. I was pacing somebody and it was like, you know, 3 a.m. and they're like, you know, you've got to eat this. And they're like, I don't want to eat this. Yeah. And it was about a 20-minute argument. It says, please take a bite. Yeah.
So, I have this rule, whatever's said on the trails stays on the trails. And I apologize in advance to my crew and my pacers that if I tell them to shut up or something, I don't really mean it. I'm pretty good though, I think. But I do have the rule that my pacer's not allowed to touch me, because I had my first miler, my girlfriend paced me at the end and she just touched my arm to help me around a puddle and I lost my shit. I was like, don't effing touch me. I just went off. So I do have a rule now that no matter what happens, obviously they need to touch me for safety reasons, but I'm like, don't touch me and don't ask me if I'm fine.
Yeah. So what is it about the touching?
So it hurt. Like I had been running, like 24 hours and her just touching my arm lightly, it bloody hurt.
Oh, really? Wow.
And it's like everything just was really overly sensitive.
Your nerves were all on end. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hated it. I was just like, no, don't touch me. And the run that I finished short on this year in April, my poor pacer, I was crying as I was coming into the last aid station and she knew she wasn't allowed to touch me, so she was just kind of hovering her arm over my shoulder and kind of moving it in circles. She's like, I really want to hug you, but I know I'm not allowed to touch you.
So you've had pacers that just have volunteered, kind of not really known you?
Yeah, especially when I first moved to Melbourne, because I didn't really know anyone in the running community when I first moved here. And that's always tough. I think the start is good because you're getting to know someone, so it can be a bit chatty. But then I think it's tough if you start going down a negative spiral and they don't know how to get you back. Whereas my girlfriend that I run with a lot here in Melbourne now, she totally knows how to pull me back. She has the same running coach, same methods. Mm-hmm. She would just be like, find the joy.
and some days, you know, you depending on where you're at, you can go like, no, no, I don't.
And she doesn't mind if I swear at her.
So how is the running community there? Pretty active.
Yeah, it was quite a shock moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, because over in the West it was quite small compared to here. Definitely grown a lot in the last few years, which is amazing. A lot bigger here, and kind of little cliques, you know, like you got your mountain runners and then you got your road runners, and but like everyone's super friendly. All the race directors are fantastic. It's, I think, a lot more challenging races over here, though saying that, I think WA's definitely throwing some more challenges over there now, but it's growing at a rapid rate, which is fantastic.
That's cool.
I mean, I'm still, I'm very much attracted to those races where there's maybe 20 of us doing the miler. the multi-day I did in August, I think there was 9 of us doing the full 500.
Wow. So that's pretty slim. So you would really be out there by yourself on that.
What I'm attracted to, those real sort of grassroots runs where there's not many of you, you're thrown out in the bush, you got to carry, you know, 7 kilos worth of mandatory gear in case something happens, and it's the adventure of that rather than a trail run where every section is marked and, you know, there's drinks every 10Ks. I want that, throw me out in the bush and make me find my own way and survive.
That's it. Yeah. Then I'm trying to think, there aren't very many of them in the United States that tend to be that way. And there are a lot of race directors that don't mark the course well, but there's not very many that are, that kind of self-supported.
Yeah, which I totally get. You know, the days we live in, insurance and liability and all that sort of stuff, there has to be things in place. But like, if I could have a race where there is no course markings and you've just got to go find your way from A to B and you get water from the rivers along the way and, yeah, sort yourself out, I love that. I think that's cool.
Well, that's almost adventure racing. Very, very, very similar to that. Well, thank you a lot. How can people get a hold of you if they wanted to?
My website's got all my social tags and everything on it. So jackieodonoghue.com.au. And then from there you can reach me on Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn.
Okay. That sounds good. Before I let you go, I have the bridge questions.
Who approaches the bridge of death must answer me these questions 3. The other side he see.
Ask me the questions, Bridgekeeper. I'm not afraid.
What is your must-have piece of gear? The thing that you count on the most?
Oh, living in Australia, I should say my water bottle. I've got one of those little water, those straws that you can drink like out of a puddle. Mm-hmm. Probably that. I wouldn't run without that in the trails.
I just recently purchased one of those because I'm going to be doing some things that are going to be a little bit farther away and, you know.
Yeah.
Second question is, what is the strangest thing that you've seen on the trail?
Does it have to be real?
No.
Or a hallucination?
No. If you've been out on the trail, if you've been out on the trail and you saw it, then it counts.
Well, there's probably 2 actually. So one was a hallucination where I thought there was an alien spaceship up on the top of the mountain, but it was just the ski lifts lit up. But I was dead sure that was an alien spaceship. The second one was when I was on a multi-day hike and I was really bush bashing through this section and I'm kind of pushing the trees away and then this guy's walking towards me in full camo gear with a machete down the side of his pack, and that was probably maybe not the strangest but the scariest thing I've seen out on the trails when I'm on my own. He ended up being lovely, but yeah, that's probably up there.
So what was he doing out there with a machete?
He had the machete because it was so overgrown.
Okay.
Well, that's what I assume. I didn't ask, but he was quite lovely and out for a hike. But I have to admit, we're going in opposite directions for the next 5Ks. I was kind of looking over my shoulder a little bit and, a little bit worried. And
yeah. Yeah, because the serial killers, a lot of serial killers are very charming people.
Yeah, exactly. It took me a while before I told my hubby about that incident, but
So what is a word or phrase that sums up your life philosophy?
Oh, what adventure is the word? Just everything to me is, so an adventure for me isn't just being out in the bush or trail hiking, whatever it might be. Adventure to me is also my hubby and I packed up the two dogs and moved states, not knowing anyone. Like, that was an adventure. I just, I think we all need a bit more adventure in our lives.
So it was not a forced move. It was something you just chose to do?
It was offered to me through work.
Okay.
So work offered me a role over here in Victoria. So I could have turned it down, but we just went, why not? Let's go see what's on the other side of the country and see what happens.
And that is a little bit unusual. There are a lot of people who really, they tend to get comfortable and stay in just one spot.
Yeah. Oh, and it's for the better. Like, we're staying here now. We love it. We're both ingrained in our sport. We love our going to the sport here. We love it. So it was definitely a very good decision that we made.
Well, thank you a lot, Jackie. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Ultra Marathon Mindset Podcast. I do enjoy being able to spend time with you here each week. I appreciate you taking the time to listen. The show notes for this episode and others are at ultramindsetpodcast.run. You can find this week's guest there. More information, links to their social media and website. There's also a podcast player there if you want to share this episode with somebody who does not normally listen to podcasts and doesn't have a podcast player on their phone. You can also find links there for my Amazon affiliate link, Crush Your Goals course, a short course I made to help you get your goals in order. Also, you can schedule a chat with me. My online calendar is there. All of these links are at the sidebar if you're on a laptop, or you have to scroll clear to the bottom if you are on a phone. If you did enjoy this episode and you do know somebody who might like it, take it just a minute, send them a link so they can listen. Remember that an ultramarathon mindset is about more than just running. You need a strong mindset for success no matter what your goal in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Thank you again for listening. I'll see you next time.